Welcome to Tangible Assets for Tangible Results with Troy Eckert. This one-hour, information-packed program will give insight and specific details how investors can review, learn about, and consider different tangible asset classes for your portfolio. Array of topics, specific details, and critical tips to protect and build your wealth. Now, here is your host, Troy Eckert.
Hey, it's a great Monday here in Texas. We've thawed out. Everybody's having a great time figuring out how their pipes are working. They're figuring out the valuable assets they have in natural resources such as natural gas. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank you for coming to the show today. We're going to be talking about some great stuff. I'll be talking to you in the last part of the show specifically about cryptocurrency and the Bitcoin. What I'd like to do is just remind everyone a little bit about who Troy Eckert is and what the show is all about. This is Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. First off and foremost, let me tell you, I've been in the investment world since 1985. I've had an exciting career, and every single year, every single cycle, it seems like something else pops up that's brand new on the landscape. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to get started by just sharing a little bit of examples of some of the things I've seen go on in the last 35 years since I started my career. One that I should tell you is that I'm a kind of a crazy guy. I love to talk about things that make money. I love to talk about the ways in which money is abused, used, and successfully deployed. And when I do that, I want each of my listeners to understand it comes from firsthand experience. This is not about reading a book. It's not about making up stories that don't exist. It's really, truly about things I've seen, done, invested in, and I've had partners that have shared with me. So it's been something that's been quite a wonderful experience over the last 35 years. So let's just kind of bring everybody up to speed, for example. So first off, I started my career as an investment broker back in the 1980s, back in the heydays. When I see the movie Wolf of Wall Street, I'm like, yep, I think some of the guys I knew actually threw midgets against the wall. And I think some of those scenes actually came from some of the brokerage houses that I knew existed back in Dallas in the 1980s. The fact is, it is a crazy world when you talk about investments and you talk about assets and you talk about the things that you and I as investors are trying to do. Now, I get asked a lot of times, Troy, you're doing this show. You're actually trying to get a show active about tangible assets and tangible results. And what's the purpose? What's the point of your show? And let me tell you what the point of the show is that my main focus has been since the 1980s all about oil and gas and oil and gas exploration, pipelines, and mineral rights. That's my main area of expertise. But by and through all the thousands of millionaires that I have represented as clients and investors over the last 35 years, I've had an absolute PhD lesson across many, many spaces and sectors of investing. And so when I think about coming to you today with this show, it's all about how I can take those experiences, take those actual day-to-day word of mouth, experiences, writing the checks, seeing the results, starting a project all the way through execution and dilution and or liquidation and saying, here's what happened and how we can do things right or wrong. Well, today's topic is something that's on the top of many, many investors' minds. I mean, when you have Elon Musk come out and say, hey, I'm putting $1.4 billion in Bitcoin, man, the markets responded. They responded by saying, is he making a smart move? Is this a crazy move? Why is Elon Musk making such a massive position in something like cryptocurrency and Bitcoin? Well, how convenient it happened to be that I was doing a show on Bitcoin today. And that's what we're going to talk about later in the show. So let's talk about a couple things right off the bat. First off, just to refresh most of your memory. Now, remember, I'm going to age myself a little bit here because I'm 56 years old. I started the investment community in 1985. I mean, we did not really have anything that was technologically close to what we have today. We used fax machines. We had pagers. We had a computer. So let's just use computers as an example. When I started off in college in 1982, I was given a business directive for getting my degree, and they wanted to put me in a CSI class, Computer Systems of Information. And I looked at that and I said, you know, I grew up on a farm, poor family in South Texas. I don't know what a computer is. Don't really have much information about it. Don't see how in the world I'm going to use something like a computer. Well, back in 1982, that was something that was on the cutting edge of where it was going to be as it is today. But who could have predicted that an Apple computer would lead to what Apple is today? Who could have known that you cannot live, survive, or function in today's market without having a computer? I mean, you almost are isolated from every part of the economy if you don't have an email, if you don't have ability for online transactions. Well, what happened in 1992? Was there a changeover in the last decade from 1982 to 1992? Absolutely. All of a sudden, cell phones. I remember the day I would go out on some of the wells we were drilling, and you had a cell phone that came around, and you had to almost pull out a suitcase, put it on the top of your shoulder, and try to stand on the highest hill to see if you could get cell reception because the phones were so big, and they were the old bag phones. Now, most of you younger listeners and most of you younger investors probably have no clue what I'm talking about. Mainframes for computers the size of an entire floor of a building, cell phones the size of Samsonite luggage, and at the end of the day, you thought, where is this going? Is it really going to be something that I need? Well, I can tell you, by the end of the 1990s, you couldn't go anywhere without a cell phone. You didn't even know how you were going to function without having a computer. And the reality is, even today, at this standard, you look back at what took place in the 1990s, those things are now on antique shelves. You go downtown to any small town in Texas, and you're finding 8-track tape players, you're finding old computers, and you're finding bag phones sitting on the wall, and you're going, who in the world would have used that? Well, what happened to us in the 2000s? Well, early 2000s, the internet took off. I mean, the dot-coms, all the different dot-com communities just blasted through the internet and created this enormous online market that just has become a mainstay of where we're at today. You really can't exist without having a presence. Then comes the social media. You take something as simple as Facebook and you say, well, Facebook is just a social media. Well, now it's like the number one media when it comes to advertising and getting your name out and creating some kind of a following. And you take all these different online sites, and they didn't exist in the 1990s. They didn't exist in the 1980s. Today, you can't hardly run a business without being in some way or another related to cell phones, computers, and of course, with the internet and all that goes on in social and online digital transactions and information. So where are we at today? Today, we're talking about cryptocurrency, and we're saying to ourselves, is this the same as what we saw back in the 1980s and 1990s? Is cryptocurrency the new Facebook? Is it the new Google? Is it the new AT&T? Is it the new Verizon? And the answer is, we'll see. As we go through the entire talk show today, we'll talk about whether or not really cryptocurrency is something that is a fad, or if it's something that's building toward being mainstream in 10, 20, or 30 years. And I think that's really important. So let's go through a couple of examples, and let's see how you think some of this stuff that was generated as far as investment ideas and some of the ideas that were taking place 10, 20 years ago and how people thought about it. So first and foremost, let's talk about an example. In computers, when I first started, as I mentioned, in 1982 in college, you know, at that time I was walking to class. I literally remember the university that I was at when you registered to go get your classes was in about a 12-story building. And you had to literally walk the staircase from floor to floor to floor to go get your classes. History on floor 3, math on floor 8, et cetera. And you'd run up and down the stairs trying to get your schedule made. So that way, if you happened to pick a Tuesday, Thursday, 3 o'clock, and you got the class that you wanted, but it conflicted with one of your other classes, you didn't get online your cell phone. You didn't get on your computer. You ran back down to the floor that had the competing or opposing class time and tried to reschedule. Well, why is that important to talk about? Because I can assure you, in my age group, in my first computer class, I was told by the professor, those of you that are born in this era, you sitting in this classroom today are in the worst position as a potential individual that will accept computer technology. Those of you in this class will think, I don't need computers because it's not being currently used today, so you'll pay very little attention to it, the majority of you. As you get older and this industry evolves, you'll find yourself behind the eight ball. You'll find yourself behind in knowing how the computers work, the software, the programming, the utilization. But yet those that are younger than you will embrace this because their minds are still willing to accept new technology because they've not created some kind of a pattern of functionality in both education and in the business and e-commerce and commerce itself. Not e-commerce, but commerce. The older generation, older than 40 years old, will embrace it because as computers become more mainstream, they're going to find themselves being left out because why? Well, they were so old, they didn't get the learning in college. They're going to have on real hand application and learning about computers. So here we are going to college. We've got this great CSI class. I looked at it as just a blow off class. How do I memorize the data? How do I pass and get an A or B, put it on my check mark, done, gone. go into the business world, start handling investments. My stockbroker's using a computer. I don't care. I'm getting paper confirmation for my stock transactions. Everything was done by faxes and paper. So really, for the first 15 years of my career, I had really very little use and very little need for computers. Then it all happened. I think 9/11 really created what I call the mobility and the acceptability of computers. Because when the 9/11 occurred, there was a complete migration that occurred across the country. A lot of people moved out of the big cities. They realized they could do their jobs via the internet. Being in oil and gas, I had geologists that were all living in Houston, Texas. They had to be at the office working on real paper, working in the office with faxes and files and cabinets of all the data. And all of a sudden, the internet and digitized mapping and digitized data was able to be drawn offline. And all of a sudden, the geologists and geophysicists and the engineers said, I don't have to live in Houston anymore. I can pick up, move my family to a better place, relocate my family, and still functionally get everything that I want done online. I myself moved out of Dallas, Texas in 1997. I moved to the Texas Hill Country, and I found that not only did my business do fine, I found out my business was accelerated. So whereas in the 1980s, I was told about computers and could care less, by the 1990s, I'm thinking, man, I wish I would have paid attention. I wish I would have listened and had the data. And as a result, in the 1990s, I was 10 years behind everybody else in trying to learn how to use computers. Even today, I consider myself to be a knucklehead when it comes to computers and technology and software. Even this entire Zoom presentation, even this entire Voice America conference today or presentation of this podcast is all about, can you get online? Can you make it work? Last week in Texas, we had one of the worst snowstorms, Arctic blast, if you will, that I can remember in my life. I don't remember Texas ever being below zero in temperature. It was -1 or -2 degrees, depending on where you're standing. It was bitter. It was cold. And you found out very quickly that when you don't have electricity, it's cold inside your house and outside your house. And when it's cold 3, 4, 5 days in a row and you can't get electricity, you can't take showers, you don't have any way of doing really anything other than hunkering down, you start to realize, I can't get my work done. I don't have a computer. I can't get warm, so I can't really talk on the phone. I can't charge my phone because I don't have the way to get electricity to my phone for charging. So you start to realize we are truly in a different environment than we were 20 years ago. But you could not have told me in the 1980s that I was facing a scenario where my house wouldn't stay warm, my phone couldn't be charged, and I could not conduct business. You couldn't even get gas at gas stations because the gas pumps didn't work. You literally were almost in a COVID lockdown because of an Arctic blast. So the question is, how is Bitcoin like the computer age? Well, it's about 10 years in its infancy. I believe it was created in 2009. It was a cryptocurrency, which I can define for you in a minute, but the reality is it was an evolving industry, which most people did not even believe was going to ever evolve and successfully stay active. It was something I heard about 8, 9 years ago. I have younger kids, and they were talking about, hey, Dad, there's people buying this Bitcoin. They're trading it in college, and all the younger generation understands it, and they're playing, and it's running from, you know, $1,500 a coin up to $7,000 a coin, and there's people making millions, if not billions, off these coins. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I hear what you're saying, but like in the 1980s, I'm not quite letting my brain get around the idea that this is a currency that I can understand and a currency, because why? I'm still old school. I still have checkbooks. I'm still old school. I carry some cash in my pocket so I can tip a waiter. I can pay the valet out front. I've told my kids for the last 10 years, you got to have some cash in your pocket, because what if the ATM doesn't work? What if the app you have doesn't work? What if you can't pay on Venmo? You got to have some way of being able to do a transaction without having to have some kind of a computer or some kind of technology. Well, less and less of that's becoming a reality, because we're moving, I believe, to less and less of an actual physical currency and more reliant upon a cryptocurrency, a currency that's digital. And if that's true, you have one or two choices. Be like me in the 1980s and deny it, refuse it, don't learn about it, don't think about it, don't ask questions about it, try to get through it. Well, that's fine. If I'm 56 years old today, is my goal just to get through the next 20 years until I drop dead to figure out whether or not it makes sense? Do I want to go grab that cell phone out of the back of the trunk that looks like a suitcase? Or do I know that with advanced engineering and advanced intellectual capacity. We're going to find a much better way for cell phones to work, for computers to work. And now, what do we have? One of the worst issues, the oldest issues, if you will, of a cell phone is probably stronger than the computers they had in mainframes back in the 1980s. That's how far we've come. So the question is, who created Bitcoin? What is Bitcoin? What is cryptocurrency? How does it work? Why did we go to cryptocurrency? All of this will be in the last half of the show, but I want you to know we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about whether it's something you should pay attention to, and we're going to talk about it whether it's not, it's something that's real and credible, because at the end of the show, you're going to have to make a decision. You don't have to, but I'm going to recommend you do. You're either going to have to embrace it or you're going to have to ignore it and let the cards fall where they may. All right, let's talk about the industry as itself. I want to give you an example about how you have to learn how to think out of the box. So remember, the show is Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. I started off by letting you know this is going to be about cryptocurrency, it's going to be about Bitcoin, and it's going to be about thinking beyond today. It's about thinking beyond the now. If you were an architect, you have to start with a blank piece of paper, and you have to say to yourself, what could be? What it could be? What can I draw? What do I see on that blank piece of paper? Do I see a hotel? Do I see a condominium complex? Do I see a horse ranch? Do I see residential homes? In other words, when you think about investing, you must allow your mind to think in terms of zero. What is it today? What could repurposing or reutilization look like? Here's an actual business transaction. I can't give you the name because effectively it's a privately held company, but it's a company that I started years ago, and we were going to buy a major asset from a large publicly traded company. I was presented an idea and they said, hey, we think we have a way to buy a substantial amount of assets from a publicly traded company who we believe possibly will be divesting that asset because they've had a change in direction as they've had a change in management. My first question is, just like with Bitcoin, is who, what, where, when, why, how? Who is it? Why is it? Why will they sell it? Why can I make money on it? And what is in the world are you coming to me for? I'm not the richest guy. I don't have access to the greatest amount of money, but you're coming to me for a reason. And the answer was, it's XYZ public company. They decided to divest out of that market. They've already taken substantial tax advantage, so they don't have really anything left in it as far as basis. And they've decided that it's costing them more as a major company to continue to own it than it would be to divest it at a much lower price. Made sense to me. I said, now the last question, why me? Why are you coming to me out of all the people you could come to? And they said, because we know that you as an entrepreneur-minded individual can see a relative value beyond the static value it offers today. So it'd be like buying, an orange. And you know you've got a bunch of seeds in the orange. One person buys the orange because they believe it's going to be a great orange. It's sweet. It's time of the season. It's going to be fantastic. The next person buys the orange and says, you know, I can squeeze that orange and I can put it into three or four cocktails and I can sell those cocktails for $14 a piece and I can make $25 in profit squeezing orange juice into those cocktails. And the next guy looks at it and says, I'm going to do all the above. I'm going to eat two slices of the orange. I'm going to squeeze the balance into those three cocktails and make my $25. And I'm going to take the seeds and go plant them and maybe start myself some orange trees, which will give me a 1,000-fold advantage over buying that one orange. That's why I see Bitcoin. Okay. I see the same kind of opportunity, the same kind of mindset, just in some different nuances. In my case, though, I'm also asking you to think about this in the example I'm going to use, which is this asset, when it came to me, required me to take some assumptions. It was unknown. There were some uncertainties in timing. There was uncertainties in price. It was a big transaction. There was uncertainties in financing. All the things you normally do in a business transaction, but I'm going to accelerate and fast forward for you. So here's how it goes. Identify the asset. I create an agreement. I say I'm going to be the capital provider, but I'm also going to control the direction. When I put my money up, I said I've got certain points that I want to see successfully met that I can see whether or not I want to off-ramp and get out of the investment or cut my losses or if I want to continue. Bitcoin's the same way. Is it going to gain popularity? Is it going to be more mainstream? Is it going to be more widely accepted? Is there a greater utilization for Bitcoin or cryptocurrency beyond just all the people trading it to see if they can make a spread or an arbitrage on the value of the price that it's trading? I don't know. These are things similar to my transaction that I wanted to see. In my case, I had mile markers that I set up saying, if we get to point A, I'll go to point B. If point B can successfully be met, I'll move to point C. By the way, in all these tangible assets I bring up week to week, these are the same kind of scenarios, the same kind of checkpoints each one of you have to do, whether it's real estate investing, hard money loans, whether it's mineral rights, whether it's the project I'm talking about. It really is you deciding where you're willing to go with commitment, both in capital and time, and where you might want to off ramp if in fact that calls for that. So this project goes forward. I'm up to about $500,000 of my own money invested. We're moving along the track. And finally, it comes down to everything is played out. It looks real. It smells real. All the check marks in the box have been made. Now you got to put your big boy pants on. Now we got to decide, are we going to buy this asset? Because if we do, I need about $25 million to put this baby to rest. I need $25 million. And Big Troy doesn't have that kind of money. No, he doesn't. But what he has connections. He has a lot of wealthy investors who, like himself, are looking for arbitrage, opportunity, and unique assets. Now, this also plays into Bitcoin. Why? Bitcoin has a finite number of coins. It is decentralized, meaning there's not a single central government that runs the cryptocurrency market. And because of that, and the finite amount of coins, it's like my opportunity. It means if you can identify it, if you can appreciate what it may do for you, and you can assume and tolerate the risk of the unknowns today, what can happen if you're successful and that investment or that asset moves forward in a positive direction? So I did. I looked at it and said, okay, I'm already in. I've got $500,000 invested. Now at this point, what do I do about it? Well, I better go find myself $25 million of commitment. So I did. I successfully found partners. We put up the money. We buy the assets. We close. Oh, I'm going to write a book about it one day. It was a phenomenal transaction. It included titans in the industry going head to head. It included every possible derailment. I promise you, if I told 1,000 people about this project, I had 999 say, you'll never get it done. It'll never happen. There is every reason in the book. In other words, it's like Columbus standing at the shoreline and everybody at the dock said, you're going to fall off the face of the earth. The earth is flat. And one guy in the crowd looked at him and said, hey, I'll see you next year when you get back. Have a safe voyage. Well, I had 999 out of 1,000 people telling me I was an idiot. It was never going to happen. You're not going to get the transaction done. And so I sat there and had to tell myself, does the investment make logical sense? The who, what, where, when, how, why? Do all the boxes check? And they did. So I was able to assess my risk. I was able to put money to work that I could afford to lose. And I said to myself, but the good news is if I'm right, where am I going to go with my investment? So that's what we focused on. Now, we're about to talk about Bitcoin in direct details here in a few minutes, but I'm going to wrap this story up very fast. And what it boils down to is we've had this business in place now. We closed about 8 years ago. We paid X number of dollars for it, and it's made about 7 times our investment in a period of 7 years in net income profit. And it's a substantial asset. It's privately held. No one knows really about it except for those of us that are owners. And it's been a phenomenal investment for almost a decade. But it took 3 years to get it under wraps. It took approximately 7 or 8 years of watching the business grow. And the asset is worth a lot more than we paid for it when we started 10 years ago. And the lessons I learned were as follows. It was a tangible asset. It was real property. It had real numbers, real physical assets. I could see it, touch it, kick it, or feel it. My mantra every week, folks, if you can't see it, touch it, kick it, or feel it, you should be nervous. Well, I can't see Bitcoin. I can't touch Bitcoin. But guess what? I think it has enough of a tangible element to it. We can probably get our head around it to make it fill in that classification of tangible assets. So as I wrap the story up, here's where we're at. Today, I've used every lesson from that transaction as a small investor to not be afraid of what can be. I look at computers, I look at cell phones, and I tell myself, man, had I just opened my mind, had I just allowed myself the opportunity to listen, I absolutely would be ready to be in position to have incredible gains and be well positioned with all the things I would have invested in 10, 20 years ago that now I look back and go, well, I didn't do it. Bitcoin's the same thing. In fact, I had son-in-laws. I had my son as a petroleum engineer say, Dad, you got to look at this Bitcoin. You got to think about it. And I said, no, man, you can't even tell me in logical explanation what cryptocurrency is, how it works, who started it, where's my money, where's these coins, I want to see them. And the fact of the matter is I did not listen, but now I am an investor in Bitcoin and I am an investor in crypto, And I'll tell you in the second half of the show exactly what I think of Bitcoin, where it's going to go, how you might think about it, or at least give you some food for thought. It's pretty exciting. It has a lot of telltale signs of many other industries. And the problem is you have to decide if you embrace it, when you embrace it, and what degree you embrace it. Or you might decide, you know, I'm going to reject it. So here's what we'll touch on the bottom part of the hour. We're going to tell you, first off, let me give you a couple of phone numbers. I think that's real important. If you want to call into the show and ask some specific questions, not only on what I've discussed this week or last week, but specifically on the Bitcoin crypto conversation later in the second half, you're going to dial 866-472-5790. And again, it's Troy Eckerd, Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. That number again, 866-472-5790. I'm super excited about what we're going to talk about. I hope you guys take a short break. Come back with me in a couple of minutes. We'll be ready to rock and roll. If you ever want to reach me directly outside of the show, you can always call me my office, which is 800-527-8895. Now, I offer that number because you may want to talk about something other than today's show content. I know I have a lot of investors who reach out to me to help them with investments outside where they may invest in, I don't know, mineral rights or oil and gas projects or pipelines, or maybe they've inherited some land and they just need some help. If it's anything to do with energy-related tangible assets, you're more than welcome to call my office, ask for me. My assistant's name is Karma Ross. She'd be more than glad to help you out. And again, the producer of this show has been guiding me every week. He says, look, Troy, this is a new podcast. It's something that you're putting together. Your whole show and personality is going to evolve over time. And so I kind of take this as a fun way for me to say, we're going to grow together. You're going to learn to listen to what I say. I'm going to learn to listen to what you want. And together, we're going to build a fantastic show. So I'm really excited about what we'll do. In the second half, we'll be talking about the following. We're going to talk about a few acronyms and names that come with the Bitcoin. We're going to talk about the pros and cons, in my view, and as others have depicted about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. We're going to talk about Elon Musk. We're going to talk about what my personal view is about what's going on in the Bitcoin market. I think it's also for us good for us to talk about in the second half, maybe what actual fiat currency does and how that looks compared to something like cryptocurrency. Between these different items and the discussion, maybe in the last half of the show, you walk away and say, you know what, that crazy guy from Texas, maybe his brain didn't get frozen after all, and he's super excited because we're going to talk about something that could be the next big thing as we go forward the next 20 or 30 years. And I think that honestly, I'll be alive to see it. I mean, I'm 56. I'm feeling great. I feel like I can run 100 miles. So the fact is, after we get back at the bottom part of this hour, at the bottom 30 minutes of this show, I think you'll find out Bitcoin is something you want to really start focusing on. Thanks again. We'll see you on the back half of the show.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
This is Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. To reach Troy Eckert or one of his guests on the live program, we invite you to call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to teeckert@eckertenterprises.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, 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 it's a big Monday. Here we are with Troy Eckert, Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. And what I want to do is welcome you back to the show if you left for a little short break. What I find is that information can be a little overwhelming, so it's great for us to take a breather, then jump right back into it. You know, when I started doing the show, I started asking myself, you know, what am I looking to do? What am I hoping to accomplish? And, you know, I've got my main business and life is good, what I'm doing in energy. But I find myself really excited about talking to smart investors. I find it very, very appealing to me to talk about what's going on in the markets, what's going on in the investment world, because it is a dynamic, I mean, an incredibly moving market every single day. I mean, just in my space alone, in the oil and gas industry, think about what's happened in the last 12 months. We started off last year with oil and gas prices, let's say oil over $60 a barrel. Saudi Arabia and Russia comes right back in and says, guess what? We're going to flood the market and we're going to have the worst oversupply and lack of storage in the history of the U.S. And for the first time in my career since 1985, oil prices plummeted below par. We were at negative $38 a barrel. I mean, they were paying other people to take their oil so they could cover their short calls. When you think about the stock market, look what it did last year during COVID, how fast it recovered. It's like a joke I tell in my office. You know, I say, hey, you know, it's funny when you talk to financial advisors and planners and you talk to all these so-called gurus, ask one of them that predicted the Saudi and Russia oversupply to affect energy. Ask any of them who predicted to have a COVID-19 economic disaster and lockdown and stock market crash. In fact, I find it funny when I'm sitting down talking to friends these days and they say, you know what? I made 30% in the stock market. And most of the people in the room look and go, oh, you did bad. We all made 35 or 40%. When you start seeing people assume these kind of rates of return, you start scratching your head after 35 years in the industry saying, we're due for a correction and we're definitely due for some humility. And those humility pills come quite often. Now, remember, the show today is talking cryptocurrency and it's talking about Bitcoin and what that is. But one of the things I describe investors today is I say investors today, they look as nervous as a porcupine in a balloon factory. Now, visualize that. Why is it? They're almost paralyzed by fear of doing the wrong thing. They're almost paralyzed by, ooh, if I take the wrong step, maybe I don't make as good a return as my buddy. Well, if I sell my real estate too quickly and I pull out and do a 1031 tax exchange, have I left a bunch of money on the table? What if I jump into hard money loans and the loans don't pay off? What if I don't invest in mineral rights, but I should have, et cetera, et cetera? So the problem is, when you grow up on a farm like I do, there's thousands and thousands of cliches and all kinds of jokes that you can play. My dad was a huge analogy guy, and he would come up with these crazy statements. Most of them I can't say on the air. But the fact is, it was today I use them, and they're quite hilarious. But, you know, he said, it's like chickens in a thunderstorm. Thunder claps, and they all jump around, and they run around. Before you know it, you've got a chicken who's drowned in a half inch of water, knowing all he had to do is walk inside the coop and get up on top of the post, and he'd be safe from any kind of weather, plus he wouldn't drown. But investors, they don't do that. They don't listen. They don't follow good advice. They run around panicked, just like that porcupine in a balloon factory. If I move, I may pop one of my ideas, or I may bust one of my potential outlets or my avenues. So here's what I want to remind everybody, just to be fair and square. So I didn't really believe in Bitcoin till probably 6 to 9 months ago, and really didn't get serious about Bitcoin as something I personally like as an investment today. I may change my mind tomorrow, but today I feel very, very confident that Bitcoin has a lot of ground. Now, I'm going to disclose this. I don't sell Bitcoin. I don't represent companies that have Bitcoin. I'm not involved in cryptocurrency in any way to make a fee. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an investor. The only thing I invest in and my internal wealthy partners invest in is oil and gas interest. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So sometimes I get a little crazy and I start talking kind of out of my head. And if you knew me personally, you'd be like, the guy gets up at 5:30. he doesn't go to bed till midnight. He talks 100 miles an hour. You'd think he wasn't from South Texas, but he's from the Northeast. He's all over the board with information. You think, oh my gosh, you know, this guy never takes a breath of air. I think I can talk 60 minutes straight without breathing, but that's okay because there's a lot to share with you. But I wanted you to know that in my conversation, when I have my show, I want to be myself and I want you to know who I am, because either you're going to really like me or you're really going to want to turn to another channel. But if you like what I'm doing and you like what the information is, you're going to find it's going to get better and better week after week. So remember, if you want to call in and you want to ask questions, or if you want to call in and give suggestions on future shows, it's Tangible Assets with Tangible Results. But the number is 866-472-5790. So let's get after it. First off, let's talk about what exactly is cryptocurrency. Now, I've had two or three conversations with people that are in the cryptocurrency market. They hold themselves out as experts. I had one come to our personal Eckerd investor conference 2 years ago. And I said, okay, I'm going to give you 1 hour of my very precious time with my own personal $1 million plus net worth clients. And I want you to explain to the entire audience and myself, what is cryptocurrency and how does it work? We sat there and 1 hour later, we all looked at each other, literally all of us looked at each other and went, I have no clue what he said. It sounds like hocus pocus. I don't have a why, where, when, how. Therefore, it's something I'm not going to invest in. So that particular presentation 2 years ago convinced me I had no business in cryptocurrency and I was not interested in pursuing it. Because of the way the markets changed in the last 24 months and because of the significant profits made in real estate and in the stock market, investors have become a little less risk adverse. They've been, I made a lot of money in the stock market. Maybe I should try some other investments. Cannabis investments have just grown off the chart. Investing in things like SpaceX and Tesla. And if you look at the stock market, most of the stocks do not fall in any type of parameter of economic sense. I mean, they're not going off of PE ratios. They're not going off of beta. We've got wild numbers out in the stock market, but you don't want to be the dummy that gets out and watch the market run and leave you behind. And at the same time, you're saying, but my common sense says this isn't right. That's kind of how I felt about cryptocurrency. So I've had a couple other guests and I would just ask the simple question. I just want a seventh grade answer. Can you tell me in 30 seconds or less what cryptocurrency is? So this is how I understand it. So I'm taking definitions, but I'm going to put Troy Eckerd's version of the definition so that way we can all know what we're talking about. First off, cryptocurrency is a digital currency. They say digital currency. Well, let's think about this. Thousands of years, we've been talking about different ways people trade. Some people on remote islands were trading coconuts for bananas. That's currency. In their mind, the coconuts were worth one amount and bananas were worth another amount. Well, is that bad or good? If it's a recognized tradable currency, meaning one for the other, and there's a valuation tied to it, then it really is something that can be used in a monetary system. It doesn't have to be US dollar bills or rubles or pesos or colones. It just has to be something that is respected as a recognized means of currency. In this case, cryptocurrency is simple. It is currency that's been created on digital. It's been done on the internet. It's been done on computers. It is not something you can physically see or touch from the standpoint it's online. Oh my gosh, that's scary. Ladies and gentlemen, your bank account's online. Ladies and gentlemen, you're driving cars that don't have drivers driverless cars. Everything in your life now, you've got cameras at your house that you can talk. If I've got my house in Colorado, I can see who's on the front porch. I can set the air conditioner. I can change my pool instructions. Everything about our lives is becoming more and more digital. Why should currency not possibly be put into a digital format? Now, let's talk about what that means. It means there's no central authority. Now, I'm doing a little bit, this is slightly boring, but I think it's quite intriguing because it took somebody and it took me reading a great deal to break this down into simple seventh grade terminology for the average person so I can get my head around it. The guy 2 years ago was a really, really smart guy. I mean, I really loved him coming to my presentation, but quite honestly, I couldn't figure out for the life of me what the heck he said. So let's keep moving. I want to make sure we don't lose time. So cryptocurrency is a digital currency. There's no centralized authority. What does that mean? It's not like the United States Federal Reserve is controlling the US dollar. It also means because of the way Bitcoin was created, they started with a finite number of coins and each coin was given a value. No different than the gold reserve. There's only so many ounces of gold. Gold is based on X number of dollars. The gold is applied against U.S. currency, dollar bills and coins. And so much gold gives us so much value for our dollars. Well, at some point in time, we lost the currency relationship to gold. And we started just saying, it's kind of an open door. Just print as much money as you want. They're talking about printing another $1.9 trillion in U.S. currency. Or where's that coming from? Thin air? No, you're just diluting the value of your dollar by printing more, which is why the dollar is going down today. The advantage you have with cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, which is, in my view, and I've heard this used a couple of times, Bitcoin is, in fact, the gold of cryptocurrency. It's the first, the oldest, it's the most established, it's the one that's most recognized, and so therefore it's leading all the other coins that have been made after Bitcoin was established. So with a finite number of coins that have been printed, you don't have the U.S. government or Germany or France or anybody else saying, hey, we're in trouble, we're in debt, we need more money, just add more coins. No, it's finite. So fiat currency simply means currency that has a denotation to a specific governing authority, such as the United States makes dollar bills, Costa Rica makes colones, et cetera. So because of that fiat currency effect, it is really tied to a geographical area, a country. It's got centralized authority, meaning you have a central Federal Reserve that's going to decide what that currency has as far as money supply and currency printed and dollar evaluation and moving those dollar bills and the amount of currency in the market to offset inflation or recession. You don't have that with cryptocurrency. It's got a finite number. So it has to take a true finite value in a free market. How many coins? How many people want it? The more people that want it with the fewer coins means the price rises. The reason Bitcoin is rising is more people want to own a piece or a bunch of Bitcoins, and there's only so many there. The people who own the coins back and took the risk 7, 8, 10 years ago are saying, I have 100 coins. Those coins were $30 a piece when we started, hypothetically. Now they're worth $50,000 a coin. I can sell 1/1,000th of a coin and still keep the other 100 coins. So the reality is, it is because of the demand that's increased the value, which makes cryptocurrency so unique. Now, I can get my head around that. I can start seeing that. Even as a knucklehead who didn't graduate college, I can start to see that. So then let's talk about some other words that we hear when we talk about Bitcoin, right? First off, what is Bitcoin? Well, as I said, it was established in 2009 by an unknown person. They give it the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. Well, that's just a made-up name, I believe, because nobody says, here's John Smith. He invented, you know, like Al Gore says, he invented the internet, right? Well, this name is given to the person who designed and created the crypto aspect of Bitcoin, but I don't care who it is. The fact is, it's now been put into place. And the reality of it is, because it's a decentralized digital currency, it started the evolution of people recognizing it as a true currency that could, in fact, be something that replaces fiat currency like the US dollar or maybe the ruble or something else. Okay. There are other types of coins. I think there's over 6,000 different coins. Each one is trying to present themselves as a viable coin. So let's just use gold, silver, palladium, nickel, copper. It's kind of like the coins. Each coin has a different usability, has a different demand based on its functionality. And of course, it has credibility in the marketplace. All those things are critical for each one of those 6,000 coins to finally reach a point where you and I as investors and financial institutions start to say, that second coin, like I think it's a Ethereum. Ethereum is the silver. It's like the second highest valued coin, and it is probably the second most acceptable coin in cryptocurrency. But it's the silver. It's around, I think, $2,000 a coin, whereas Bitcoin is trading at $52,000 or $53,000 a coin. Again, I don't sell coins. I don't sell crypto. I don't have investments that I offer to investors. I have a little bit of my own money in Bitcoin. I started investing a couple of weeks ago, but I have my own design and I don't want to run out of time before I tell you what that is. So let's go to other examples of things you might want to know about Bitcoin. For example, these are questions I think are really important for all of us. First off, what is it about Bitcoin that makes people want to buy it? Well, if I'm sitting in another country and I'm worried about, I went hunting in Argentina 3 years ago. And at that time, the peso in Argentina was 27 pesos to a US dollar. I was down for about 5 days hunting dove. And each day I was down there, I like to look at currency because that's kind of the way my brain works. I started going, wait a minute, now it's 28 pesos to a dollar. So in 1 day, it moved 1 peso. I thought, wow, that's heavy inflation. I looked at the country, looked at the history, and I go, wow, this country's in deep, deep inflation problems. The currency's worthless, escalating like crazy. By the time I was there for 5 days, the guys that were working to help us have a great time on our hunt were begging and pleading, please, please let us possibly be paid in US dollars. And I'm like, why is it so important to you guys? And so through the language barrier, through the guide, through talking to them, they basically said, if you give us cash today in pesos, if you pay us in pesos, we're going to lose money by the time we even get to the bank tomorrow and we get to town. Not only that, but if we put in the bank, we have a variable value in the bank. But if you give us US dollars, we can hang on to them. And as the peso continues to devalue, we can deploy that money to live on. In other words, it was such a fast moving pace for that particular fiat currency. The Argentina peso was just going crazy. 12 months later, it was like 37 pesos to a dollar and just continues to get destroyed because nobody has any confidence in the Argentina peso. So that makes it understand, why is it crypto is so being so looked at by more mainstream investors? Why did Elon Musk put up $1.4 billion in Bitcoin? Well, it's either one of two things. People are buying Bitcoin or cryptocurrency because it's trading like every other stock. It's tradable. I can buy and sell it. I can get in and out. I can make proceeds and profits. Or people are buying Bitcoin and other types of cryptocurrency because they believe it, in fact, will be a mainstream currency that's accepted around the world, tied to a finite amount. And because of that, it's a safer, it's a more stable, and it is not tied to a particular political, government, or centralized authority that utilizes and manipulates the currency for their own advantage. That's big. That's a big, big statement. When you look around the world, how many countries' currency is worthless, or how many countries like Greece, they decided to take a bunch of savings away when they were in trouble and just said, sorry, we're resetting the deck. We're taking a little bit of everybody's money. Well, that doesn't happen in cryptocurrency because it's not controlled by a centralized authority. All right. So if it's online, how do I know I own it? In other words, I'm a pretty simple guy. I love Peter Lynch back in the 1980s. He was the guru that led Fidelity Investments. He always had a statement. He says, if you can't draw with a crayon, don't invest in it. Yeah, that was long before the internet and long before all the things that are going on now, because now it'd be tough to draw out a Facebook or a Google or a Uber Eats or all the other software and hardware and social media and online networking. It'd be hard to draw with a crayon. But using his analogy and using his common sense, how do you get on a piece of paper and draw out a cryptocurrency? Well, there's certain components of the cryptocurrency that make sense to me because you use analogies, and the analogies are what? All right, so I've got a coin. I've got certain parts of that process, so I have miners. What's a miner? Well, in my Troy Eckert simplicity, as I've been looking at this, the fact of the matter is that there are certain aspects of Bitcoin you have to understand. For example, what's a miner? A Bitcoin miner. Well, a miner to me is like a CPA. It's like the audit team. These guys are taking all the transactions, because what is cryptography? It is simply a special way that something is encrypted with a code and solving the code. So every transaction, my own experience, I set up my account a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. I try to put money into the account. I got to get an encrypted code. I got to put the code in. They got to verify who I am. I've got to put my ID in. I mean, it was a long process just to open the account. I thought, good gracious, it takes a lot of effort to open up the account. But it goes hand in hand with the security, because the idea of cryptocurrency is that it's encrypted to protect us on transactions. It's encrypted to protect our anonymity. It's encrypted to help us know there's securitization of the actual Bitcoin or cryptocurrency market. So when I think about something like a miner, as it's explained and as I've started to look at this, I say to myself, okay, how do I know my money's where it's supposed to be? Well, a miner is somebody who's going in the background and giving transactional verification and validity to each encryption to make sure there's not two encryptions of the same code, make sure it hasn't been used before, make sure that there is a dual side of every encrypted transaction to make sure that it's right. Well, that's important. I found this out about 2 weeks ago. One of the largest consumers of energy across the planet right now is an industry that's growing, and it's called cryptocurrency. They need these massive servers and computers just to generate enough electricity to serve the servers that are unwinding all these accumulations of data for every single transaction that's going taking place in the cryptocurrency world. Never would have thought that. Never would have thought oil and gas and energy and wind and all the other sources are now being directed toward cryptocurrency encryption verification. So these are things you don't think about, but when you start asking yourself, how many of you have had a CPA who you don't trust? How many of you have had a broker you don't trust? How many of you currently have a financial planner you haven't even done a background check on? I mean, I know that there's financial planners I know right here in Dallas. If you do a background check, they've had their license removed as a financial planner. They've been barred from the Bureau of FINRA, which is licensed to sell securities. And you're giving them hundreds of thousands of millions of your dollars as an investment, saying he's a nice guy. You don't do any verification, but you hand millions of dollars over somebody who could have been either convicted or barred from securities, but you haven't checked. So now you start asking yourself, well, how do I know that cryptocurrency has a system in place? I think Elon Musk came out and said, you know, I think $1 trillion market cap for the cryptocurrency is too high. I don't think Elon Musk invests in anything or takes any action he doesn't think he's going to be successful at. For him to put $1.4 billion into cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin last week, tells me as an investor, he's doing it because he believes it has a tremendous upside. He comes back with a follow-up statement because he said, oh my gosh, after I put in $1 billion, the market ran 23%. It's 23% up. That's good. I made some great money on my $1.4 billion investment, but I didn't want the market to run. I wanted to buy another billion, another 2 billion, because I believe the market is really on the cusp edge of where we're going to be in the next 10 to 20 years when it comes to cryptocurrency and acceptance. All right, so let's take a breath. Started the show with craziness, started the show with, hey, we're going to talk about cryptocurrency, gave you an example about how you can buy things, how over 35 years, things like the cell phone, computers, the internet, social media have all weren't even thought about 10, 20, 30 years ago. And now we're at the point where it makes a lot of sense. So here's what I would tell you. I believe, in my opinion, because of the scarcity of the Bitcoin, because it has a finite amount of coins, because people like Jamie Dimon with Chase Bank have come out and said, yeah, we like it. We're now looking at it. We're going to start trading. The normalcy of what a Bitcoin and cryptocurrency has done completely is a game changer. Now, this is not a prediction. This is not a forecast. I personally am going to accumulate a substantial amount of money into a Bitcoin portfolio, and I might include some other coins. I personally believe that the cryptocurrency market in the next decade will be so mainstream, not having cryptocurrency would in fact make you, like me, still having a checkbook. My personal gut feeling, don't go off my advice. This is just my crazy Texas mind. I think I'm going to put in money into Bitcoin. And I think it's very plausible in 10 years, a single coin is not worth $52,000 like it is today, but could be worth over $1 million per coin. And it all has to do with acceptability, and it has to do with finite quantity. So what I want to do is remind each of you every time you come to my show, I'm going to be all over the board. I'm going to talk about things that are important. I'm going to give you examples. I'm going to tell you what's going on. I'm going to share with you what my brain has on it. I've got 9 people living in my head. They all want to get out at the same time. You're never going to come to the show without having energy level. You're never going to come to the show without having facts and figures or data. And you're sure not going to be able to come to the show without being able to contact me directly. So if you want to reach me at the show, it's 866-472-5790. If you want to reach me off the air, contact my offices, Eckerd Enterprises in Dallas, Texas, 800-527-8895. I'm expecting my 6th grandbaby in about 2 weeks. I have one thing on mind. I'm going to buy myself a generator this summer when it's not cold. Those generators will be cheaper. I'm going to double the number of blankets that I have. And I'm probably going to go short wind energy because effectively solar and wind let us down as a state. And the pressure is on for the state of Texas to get their act together. So from the frozen tundra of West Texas and East Texas and South Texas to my listeners out there abroad, I thank you for your time. I'm excited about next week. You guys take care and remember, if you can't see it, touch it, kick it, or feel it, you might want to think about not owning it. Take care again from Troy Eckerd. Have a nice day. See you later.
Time, talent, and expertise. That is Tangible Assets for Tangible Results. Please join your host, Troy Eckerd, every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Central Time, and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.